I'm Mina Starziak-Hawk, and this is Mina AF, where I answer all of your questions and you can ask me anything.
Can we talk about money?
Can you still breastfeed with implants?
You're both boss moms,
and I'd love to know the story of how you met.
Literally anything any of you want to hear. Listen as we build a community and get to know each other better.
Let's talk about microdosing. You know that feeling when your body and mind are really at peace, like after a workout or a nice long shower, where you've relaxed, you're focused, and a little energized? It feels just right, like you're in the zone. Well, microdose can help you not only get into that zone easier, but stay there longer. Microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. I absolutely love how helpful these gummies are. For me, half a microdose gummy during the day helps me really stay centered and really fresh as I get everything done on my list. And they really help me relax in the evenings as well and just be present and in the moment instead of worrying about things from the day or what I have to do tomorrow. Get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com, promo code MINAAF. It's available nationwide. That's microdose.com, promo code MINAAF. For 30% off and free shipping. Microdose.com, promo code MINAAF.
Hey, you guys, hope you had a lovely Monday, a happy Tuesday, and welcome back to Mina AF. So this week's episode and next week's is going to be a little bit different. Steve and I did a podcast. It's called Sex After with Amy Marks, and it was amazing, and there was so much in there that I know you guys are going to want to hear, and they even had to break it into two episodes because it was so much. But really what she does is get into all the things that happen after challenging things that happen in your life, after babies, after infertility, after death, sex after anything, really fill in the blank. And Steve and I were all over the place after grief, after infertility. We talk about so many life challenges, and I think it's stuff that you guys are really, really going to relate to. So I wanted to be able to drop the episodes in here as well. So this is part one of Steve and I on Sex After with Amy Marks. I hope you guys enjoy it.
Hey, I'm so happy to be sitting down and talking to the both of you right now. Thank you so much for saying yes to being on Sex After.
No, of course. Thank you for asking us.
You're so welcome. I have so many questions I want to ask you, but I actually want to start with this. I want to start with, you have a podcast called Mina AF.
Yes.
Will you tell me, what is the AF?
Well, we haven't ever really explicitly said it.
Okay.
So you can leave it to your own discretion. It's been suggested that it could stand for Mina and Friends, that it could stand for Mina as F-U-C-K.
That's what I thought.
It's fill in the blank with you. Whatever works for you.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic. I lean towards the fuck part. But
yeah.
Here, what I love is that you – because we really have this in common. You said that you want to ask the uncomfortable questions and you want to talk about the things that people are embarrassed to feel and think.
Yeah.
Will you tell me why that's so important to you both?
Obviously, when we met, we both lived very different lives. They weren't public. They weren't forward facing. I didn't have
a show. How did you meet? I know the story, but how did you meet? It's a good story. How did you meet?
A mutual friend went to high school with him and introduced us, and he played hard to get. It ended up working out, and now there's two babies and the rest is history. But a mutual friend, we went and watched a basketball game together.
It's great.
Yeah, that's the condensed version.
The
condensed version. I read the full version online. So people, if you want to read the full version, it's out. It's definitely out there to read.
Yeah.
So keep talking about. So your lives were very different when you first met.
Yeah. I mean, neither of us, I think, in our wildest dreams would have imagined that we would have this kind of like forward facing life.
Yeah.
That is just, the general public pretty much knows what we're doing at all times, knows our height, weight, like everything, whether it's right or wrong, it's out there. And really the first time that, I don't know about you, but that I realized that like more people were listening and paying attention than just like my friends or my family or, you know, five other people, really was when I was talking about our IVF experience. And I was just doing kind of what I usually do, which is probably putting way too much out there and just being very open. And so I was on Instagram, like doing my injections. My Jack, who was a toddler, was sitting on the counter, like watching me, you know, take the stuff out of the vial. And it was normal to me. And then we got so many messages from so many people on Instagram.
What kind of messages did you get?
Just like, thank you so much for talking about this openly, because in, you know, I think a lot of people's experiences is it's this very hush-hush thing, or if it is talked about in like the public, it's some superstar who went through IVF and magically had a baby. Like, they don't show the messy injections and talk about the potential hormone issues or the failures. Like, it's just this kind of, you know, hush-hush, and then a baby magically comes most of the time situation. And there was just so many people who were pretty much saying, thank you. Like, I went through this and no one talks about it. So I didn't know how to talk about it or who I could talk about it with. So thank you for just like putting it out there. And for me, that was the first time I think I really realized like a lot of people are listening and a lot of people appreciate my ability and therefore Steve's ability, because he's ride or die, ability to put our lives kind of out there and not just like the really pretty stuff.
I love that you said, and not just the really pretty stuff, because so much that we see with people who are out there in the public life is the pretty stuff. So other people don't see the dark or anything that goes underneath that. So I deeply appreciate that you put out the not so pretty stuff. So can you tell me a little bit about your journey with IVF?
Yeah, it was, sorry, like you're going to have, I just,
it's okay.
I'm asking Steve questions. Don't worry about it.
Honestly, I have a terrible memory. So he probably remembers the specifics of like once the whole process started. But when we decided to try to have kids, we got pregnant literally the first weekend we were trying, much to his chagrin. There wasn't a whole lot of trying. and got pregnant with Jack, and immediately, pretty much as soon as we were allowed to have sex again after my C-section, we started trying for a second.
How long did you have to wait after a C-section to have sex?
6 weeks.
Six weeks. And then obviously at your comfort level.
Of course.
But it's a different recovery because the baby is coming out of a hole they cut versus down there.
Yeah.
So the rules were a little bit different for engagement, but it wasn't terribly long after Jack. I wanted, like, my brother that's a year older and a year younger, we're like 23 and 25 months.
So it's like Irish twins. Isn't that what they call it?
Yeah, Irish twins. And that's what I was going for. I was actually going for twins. It didn't happen. So I'm like, we're going to make Irish twins. We're going to get the crazy out fast before we realize we shouldn't have another kid. And then it just didn't work. And like, we got past the fun part of trying, and it was just like,
How long did you try for?
Yeah, 6 months.
6 months.
Which is honestly a lot less than most people before they start some kind of intervention or testing.
That was a bit of, I would say, I don't know if backlash is the right word, but it was like,
you only gave it six months.
Yeah. Like, we've been trying for 4 years before we even made a phone call. But luckily, our insurance was able to pay for some testing.
And I'm a very impatient human. So at like,
I read that about you.
It's very true. And I'm a control freak. So, you know, month two or three, I was like, this isn't right. Like, there's no,
and you knew.
It also just, something just felt off. It just felt like, this just doesn't seem right.
And we were using like the P strips where you can like, this is when you should be having sex. Right. So we were just like, the ovulation trips. We weren't just like willy-nilly, like we were actively trying.
But what I love about that is you knew. Like, I think it's so important for us to trust our guts, trust our instincts. Like, when you know, you do know, and then you took action.
And I mean, I very much am like, okay, well, if there's a problem, like, what are the options that we can do about it? Okay, let's get your sperm tested. Let's get my eggs tested. Let's make sure that we don't have like an easy fix here.
Right.
And so we did both of those things. And Steve's swimmers are very strong and plentiful.
I wish you could see the face Steve just made. That was good. It was good.
They are.
I was worried for a moment. I was like, oh.
Well, because then it's like, whose fault is it? Is it her fault? Is it my fault? You know.
But I'm curious to touch on that. Do you think that people think fault? Do you think like fault comes into play at all?
I say it in a playful way because for us, that wasn't the issue. But I 1,000% could see that being a really tough thing for people to have to work through.
I think so. I've read statistics of like divorce with failed IVF is extremely high.
Yeah. Really? And
I can imagine that there's resentment and blame that falls into that.
There's just bound to always be someone who wants it more. And there's so many emotions. And like, I'm sure it's very few times that it's like, we wanted exactly the same thing all the time. Like, I think Steve would have been fine. He was pretty much deferring to me. Like, if you want to keep trying, I am down. I'm here to support you. If you want to be done, I love you. I love our child. We can move on. And I was like, I really want to try again. And so when you have that kind of, I think, slight difference to begin with, it, I think, possibly could open the floodgates for a lot of other issues where you're misaligned, particularly when you start jacking hormones into you and, you know, it can just do wild stuff.
Yeah, hormones can do crazy things.
Yeah.
So then you got tested and you were good to go, Steve. And
I was good to go, yeah. In the testing scenario is quite awkward, as you can imagine.
What is, so I don't know, I have to ask, what is the testing?
You would think scenario? That it, you know, 20, this was year 2019.
Yeah.
You would think it would be a little bit more sexy than what it was. It was just like walk into a, basically like a,
like a hospital, 6x6 room.
Yeah. Like a little, like a jail cell with a love seat and,
a puppy pad.
Pornos in the DVD from 2001. I mean, they were, it just was a very bizarre situation. So I just did it as quickly as possible.
I was actually going to say how long we were in that room for.
And that's the other thing too, where I felt like this pressure of like, shit, what if I come out like a half hour later? That's just super awkward. Like, what did you take?
But
I'm
sure they've seen everything.
Oh, the nurses were beyond fantastic and made everything as comfortable as possible in the situation. But yeah, I'd say it was probably under 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
He's very competitive.
I got to get this just over with. I ended up having
to do it. Mind you, he had to do it more than
once. I had to do it a handful of times.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, because we saw a few doctors, and then we did IVF and also IUI.
Right.
So it was three or four times.
So then what happened when you got tested, Mina?
So I can't remember the initials for the test they do for your eggs. It's like M, it's three letters.
Okay.
And I learned so much about it at the time and learned that it is very controversial, like how they do this test to see how many eggs you have left and if they're any good. Some doctors put a lot of weight into it. Some put absolutely none. But when my results from this were you have hardly any eggs left and the ones that are left suck.
And how did that make you feel? What went through your mind when you?
It was super disappointing for so many reasons. Like, I'm the most competitive with myself. And I'm like, well, now I'm failing myself. Like, I'm failing, we can't have the kids. Like, this is what women are built to do. And I'm 32.
Yeah.
I was 32. Ooh. So I was like, I'm super healthy. I'm not that old. But again, just like educating myself so much. I didn't know literally when you're born, you have the amount of eggs you'll have your whole life. Didn't know that.
I did not know that either.
Super strange. Mm-hmm. So it's just, and that's different for so many women. So that was hard to understand that like my body was already pretty much.
What you had was minimal and the minimal amount, the follicles weren't great.
Yeah. Either. They weren't thriving. They were like, we got like another 6 months left in us. So, the initial IVF doctor that we went to said, because you have so few and the ones you have aren't any good, Whereas we would usually try an IUI or two or five before you jump to that next step of IVF.
Friends that did
10. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We would usually do those first, but that's going to waste the eggs that you have. So his recommendation was just to jump to the, you know, the big boy.
Give it all I got.
Jack me full of all the hormones, make the follicles the best they could and see what we could do.
Did you do that?
Yes. So that's what we did.
Oh, you did the IVF.
Yeah, we did that first before anything else because he didn't want to go through cycles of IUI and waste my eggs because he was so concerned with how few they were.
And how was going through IVF for you, Mina, and Steve? How was that for you as the partner?
And this is where I, like, you might remember it more because I'm just kind of like, I'm a workhorse. I'm on a mission. And this was just another job. Like, okay, I need to do these injections. They're going to do X, Y, Z. And like the first injection, I remember being really scared. And like Steve did the first handful. But I think as far as experiences I've heard from other women going through IVF, it was the effects on me were low to minimal as far as it goes with, because it's swings. A lot of hormones,
it's
like
a lot
the
of
swings
hormones.
And things like that. And I think the way my body processed it, I had very minimal effects.
Yeah.
But I don't know. What was it like for
you?
Yeah,
no, I remember thinking like, you know, your attitude, behavior, mental, you know, stability hadn't changed.
I think a lot of like the stereotype is, you know, you'll get these crazy women on their periods and then you jack them full of 10 times, those amount of hormones are going to be crazier. And I was pretty normal.
Yeah, I thought you were not normal. Yeah.
So I don't know if the stereotype is right or people are just.
I think everybody reacts very different when you inject them with hormones.
Yeah.
And then take them away.
But yeah.
Oh, so that's interesting. And then take them away.
Yeah.
So what? I didn't think about that part either.
To back up, in my early 30s, Mina and I had been together for a few years. I heard a radio commercial that was like, are you experiencing fatigue? And, you know, just all these things that like everybody goes through.
Of course.
Just checkbox for every human. It was like, well, come into the low T center, or maybe I should say, come into a center that can help diagnose low testosterone and we'll take it from there. And I did that. I got a test and the scale of my age would be, you know, let's call it 90 to 1,000. Mm-hmm. And I was at like 200, which for my age is, that's not good.
Oh, it's not good.
No, 200 is not good. It was low. So they were like, your insurance will pay for weekly injections. You just have to come here. You pick a day. We shoot your butt and you walk away. It's a 5-minute process. And I did that for probably 2 years, two solid years. I got my testosterone up to like 800-900 where you want it to be. The thing is, when you're on hormone replacement therapy or TRT, testosterone replacement therapy, your body naturally stops making the testosterone and therefore good sperm. Mm-hmm. So
I forgot about all that.
This is why I'm bringing this up.
Yeah.
So when I told my doctor, the guy who shot me in my butt weekly, I said,
did you have an intimate relationship with the guy who shot you in your butt weekly?
Yeah. We're going to try to start to make a family. And he was like, oh, okay. Well, there's a bit of a process to that. We got to take you off these hormones. Right. So I was on artificial hormones.
Right.
And so you have to kind of like you wean down the dosage for a month and then you go on a drug called Clomid, which I'm sure most of your listeners are familiar with. It's typically given for women. Mm-hmm. Helps with estrogen. So it brings your levels. It helps bring my levels back to where they naturally would be.
Right.
So we kind of had to wait about 2 months for me to get my natural sperm working again. And it worked again right away.
But so that must have been weighing on your mind when you were getting tested.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I was like, who knows what could happen right away. I could have blank sperm. We didn't know.
Right. Did you feel different weaning off the testosterone? Like, did your fatigue level go down or
no? And I've since then I've remained at really high levels. I didn't, because the idea is that you hit that mark, that number, and then when you get off of the TRT via Clomid, mm-hmm. you ideally your body kind of like catches up to where it was. So I remained at those, at the good like levels where you should be. So that was helpful.
That's great to know. Mm-hmm. So then what, so you had no issues going off the hormones. Mina, did you have issues when you came off the hormones?
Nothing that I think was noticeable, going like starting the injections or stopping, which I think it's a little bit more rare. I think probably it is. Does affect people a little bit more.
Yeah.
So I don't want anyone to think like, no, it's great. It's fine.
Right.
No, of course. Just, we're all so, so different. Like,
yeah.
It's just, none of this is one size fits all.
Yeah.
At all. So the IVF was not successful.
The IVF was not successful. So we did all the injections, and you go in, I think weekly for, an ultrasound, and they look at the follicles to see like how big they are. And once they're really big and they like the way they look, they'll give you a trigger injection, which you kind of shoot. And then you go a certain amount of days later, because what the trigger injection does is like triggers your body to say, okay, release the eggs so they could be collected. So mm-hmm. you do the trigger injection, you go in. I call it for the harvest. Sounds a little crass that way, but that's what I always called it. And they take the eggs out. And that's when he's got to give him more sperm, and they take the egg and the sperm and they do whatever magic and then put it back in. So we got to that point where they put it back in. And again, there's a kind of difference between the 2 and the 3 day window. Some doctors want to put it back in. So they mix it and let it grow for 2 days, mm-hmm. or they let it grow for 3 days. Some doctors do one or the other before they put it back in. And I guess that whole conversation is, you know, we want to get it back into its natural habitat as soon as possible. So at day 2, but a lot of doctors wait till day 3 because a huge portion of the eggs die between day 2 and day 3.
Right.
So we went back in on day 3. That's what my doctor did. Mm-hmm.
And we got a phone call and he was like, things are looking great.
Yeah. I totally forgot about that.
Yeah. Follicles are, and we were, I was kind of surprised. I honestly didn't think it was any of the, I didn't think any of this was going to work. Like,
oh, you
Mina
didn't.
Kind of touched upon earlier. She was like, Steve was just kind of, you know, Steve was cool with like whatever. But I, in the back of my mind, I was like, I mean, he sat us down and said, you have less than 1% chance of getting pregnant.
So oh, when he somebody, did. Oh, so that's how this started.
That was, no, that's not how it started.
Well, at one point.
But that was after the failed IVF. So he did not give us great odds, but he was like, it's worth trying.
Mm-hmm.
So. But yeah, I think, I mean, I just assume I'm going to be able to figure out how to do everything. So I just assumed, I was like, I'm going to be able to figure out how to make IVF work.
Yeah.
Well,
let's try it again. And he was like, no, you.
Well, so we put the eggs back in.
Yeah.
And on day like 1 afterwards, he was like, they're looking good. They're okay. Mm-hmm. And then they did not take. So it didn't work. And that's when he sat us down. And this is all in an episode of the show. Where he said, it didn't work and you have no eggs and we're not going to do this again. You couldn't really pay me to do it again because I have that little confidence, like it's not going to work. And I said, like, what are we talking about? Like a 1% chance or like a 10% chance? And he was like, less than 1% chance.
He said.
Well, he asked why we got pregnant with Jack. And he was like, it was medical.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know why.
I said, well, how did we get pregnant with our first child so quickly? And he was like, that's a miracle. Yeah.
That was super hard because that didn't necessarily hit until the next thing he said was he like handed us a pamphlet across the table that to read about donor eggs.
Yeah.
And I think that's for when both of us, I was just like, what?
Yeah.
Like it never crossed my mind.
Right.
That it wasn't going to work and we weren't going to be able to figure out what to do with my body to get it to work.
Just keep trying.
Yeah.
Right.
Like just doing it one and done. And that's just not how I am. Like I do it till I figure out how to do it. And he was saying that's absolutely not an option. move on mentally, get a donor egg if you want a kid, or adopt. And that, I think, was just, again, we were filming this, like Steve and I are obviously crying in the moment, but then we had driven separate. We had to go to different places afterwards. So got in my car and just like lost it, because I was processing so many things, not just that like my body wasn't working, but like this whole house I built, the floor plan is designed around multiple children, like where the playroom is, where the kids' rooms are, the kids' rooms, many things.
Once you have your kind of like your heart set on anything, right?
Yeah.
Whatever it is. When your heart is set on something and you're told you're not going to get that, it's devastating.
Yeah. It was just kind of like having to relook at everything I thought I had planned for my entire life because it wasn't working.
So Mina, how long did you both stay in that? Like, how long did you stay in the sadness of it and the pain of that? How long did you stay in that until you were able to, thank you very much, until you were
not
able
long.
To
move? That's a good question. Not long.
Well, I don't think that life allows, our lives didn't allow us to go home, lay on the couch for 2 days and sulk about it. We, you know.
Well, and even beyond that, it was, you know, when we did kind of come back together that day and like, okay, I don't think a donor egg is a thing for us. Like that, the reasons we wanted kids, and it's a great option for so many people. But so we kind of talked about really that day and the next day. It's, you know, we're incredibly blessed. Obviously we have Jack, a lot of people who love to remind us we already have one kid. We should be grateful.
Do people, I want to stop you there. Do you get that?
So many people. Again, we did IVF 10 times. You only did it once. At least you have a kid. We still don't have a kid. And I'm like, you guys, it's not a competition.
I think
it's just not.
I think in general, and Mina and I talk about this frequently with posts, people love to compare.
We're very self-centered people.
Yeah,
like just in general, as an animal, like you relate everything to your own experience, whether that's good or bad.
It just felt very like, instead of, I'm so sorry to hear this, I wish you the best of luck, it was like, everything was like, yes, me too. We've had 10 IVF, you know, it's just like, I don't want to say competition, but it just, everything felt like my story is worse than your story.
It's so interesting you said that, because as a cancer survivor and as someone who lost their mother to cancer when I was young, people, I'm not saying as a general thing, but people I think have a hard time just staying, being present, and listening to your story.
We talk about it all the time.
You do?
Oh yeah.
all the time.
We've had a lot of
this. Hopefully this will get me crying. We'll get edited, but today's my dad's.
His dad passed away today. A few years ago.
And I don't even like bring it up publicly anymore, because I don't need to hear 300 people's grandma that passed away too.
People just don't really know how to relate. Like I said, they don't know how to sit in the discomfort and just let you be sad or let you be. They have to say, oh, well, it's okay because like this was worse and this happened to me. Or it's just something I think you actively have to work on. I do. I try to do it too, because I think your inclination as humans, we want to be able to relate. We want to say like, oh, well, I can understand you.
Correct.
But a lot of times we just can't. Like your grandma passing away is different than Steve's loss of his dad, no matter how much you think they're similar. So just being able to say, you know, that sounds really awful. I'm so sorry for you.
Like, and Mina,
people just don't know how to leave it there.
Mina is very good at reminding me, like, they're just trying to relate to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I really understand that, but I think it's such a blessing whenever I meet someone and I can share something and they can actually, it's going to make me cry.
Yeah.
They can hold that space.
Hold
that space.
It's rare.
It is rare, but
it's rare.
To me, it's so healing and And it makes us feel seen and it makes us feel heard. And I think it helps us to heal.
And I'm super aware of it. Oh, I'm so sorry for your loss. I've lost my mom, my dad, my sister, my best friend all within 3 years. You know, that doesn't matter to them.
Yeah.
It doesn't help. And, you know, this might offend some listeners and that's not my intention. It just almost makes it harder, you know? And you as a cancer survivor, I'm sure you, every single time you probably even bring it, the C word up. It's
my sister had cancer.
This isn't about you at this moment right now.
Every single time. Every time.
And so
every time. And I have to tell you, when I was young and my mother died of cancer, because I was 17 when my mom died.
Oh, it's a perfect time for a mom to die. 17?
Oh, yeah. That wasn't a game changer in my life.
Jesus.
But nobody, young people to hold that space for me. So what I did what you do, Steve. I stopped talking about it. Like there were so many people who had they were like, your mother died when you were young. I just shut that door down and talked to nobody.
It's hard. And I know that Mina always reminds me, their intentions are good. They're not doing it out of bad intentions. And I get that, but I would be so frustrated. Like, you know, like bored on the couch, reading comments, which I try not to do anymore. And I'm just like, God dang. Can we curse on this podcast?
Abso-fucking-lutely.
Like, God damn, this isn't about you, Cindy. But people are, they're trying to relate, but it's also, it feels kind of icky and selfish.
No, I totally
understand. And that's with the IVF story was like, at first we wanted to go real public with this to help, right? And then along that journey of helping, which I think we helped way more than we hindered, but along that journey, it was like,
it was
you already have a kid. Yeah. How dare you? And you only had to try X amount of months. And it was just like,
oh, you know, you guys are rich, so you can afford it. Like, actually, his insurance paid for it. And the money was a part of the conversation because his insurance paid for the first round. We're like, okay, if we're going forward, what money is left on the insurance? How much are we willing? Like, that's a big part of the conversation for so many people because not a lot of people have the opportunity with their insurance to cover those kind of things. Like, his company was amazing.
Yeah.
If we were to go through that today, everything would be out of pocket because we're on my insurance and my insurance sucks. You know, so many people just assuming because I have a TV show, that I'm rich, and that this is all just easy and it's magical for us. Which is, you know, kind of the dark side about sharing everything so publicly. And we regularly have those conversations like, is it worth it? I still think it's worth it with the amount of like crap we get back. But particularly with my podcast now, like that's the audience that I want to grow, that I want to feel connected to. And they're the ones that appreciate those difficult conversations and can leave room for the questions and like process this. I'm not telling you guys what to do, but like, let's think about these 10 things and why we do this way. And much of my, you know, older generation people that follow me from the show just don't have that mindset.
It's ideal, like with haters. Well, you call them haters, right? I mean, I don't know what else you're going to call it. And sometimes it makes me go, I just want to crawl back into a hole. And why am I doing this? I'm not going to put myself out there anymore because I'm sure you're both sensitive people like I am. And then you have that moment of, but if I help one person, if I made a difference to one person, then it's all worth it.
Yeah. And I mean, that's exactly what it was, I think, for us in the long run. And since then, which was, how many years ago? Was that 4 years ago that all started?
Yeah.
I mean, there's been so many other things that we've both gone through, like so many of his losses, our IVF, my post-baby mommy makeover. Oh my God, did people write about that?
Yeah.
All these things that like I keep making the active choice to be open with because literally only because the ridiculous amount of messages I get from other people, like saying thank you. Yeah. You made it easier for me to have this conversation with my friend, with my husband, with, you know, my parents, with whatever. Like, and I'm definitely not like the most mentally stable person. Like, I go to therapy, I'm working on myself, so I don't claim to be. But I think just talking about things and like having them out in the open immediately takes that edge off, because it's so many of these conversations are shameful. Like, my body didn't work. Like, that's shameful. I didn't love my post baby body. That's shameful. Like, you should love your torn abdominal muscles and all those things. Like, I don't.
Right.
And I'm not ashamed.
And that's your choice. That's your choice that you don't.
And I just didn't want people to ever, like, particularly with my plastic surgery, I was like, I don't want to be that person that I see on social media that I'm like, that bitch had three kids. Like, she looks great on the beach. If I did 10 more crunches or if I ate less, like, if you see me on the beach with my kids, no, I work my butt off. He's an amazing trainer and I do his program and I don't like I eat like an asshole and I have implants and I got a tummy tuck and all those things can exist together. But I don't want to ever set unrealistic expectations for people just by looking at me and thinking she's rich, she's perfect, her husband's handsome, you know, whatever, fill in the blank. So, and probably part of it is also like, I'm going to call out all my flaws mm-hmm. way before y'all have a chance to.
I think so, part of that, part of the whole problem is that the rest of like a lot of the influencers and let's say A celebrities only post those
top notch.
Yeah. The highlight reel. And so we try to keep it real. Teen suicide is up. Crazy numbers because Instagram and feeling less than,
yes,
comparing teens, comparing themselves to what they're seeing on Instagram as real. So,
and just nothing is real.
Nothing
like,
is real.
Don't even get into AI. That's just a
don't even start me on that. Don't even start me on that. But it's true. So I go back to saying, I love that you share the truth, your truth. You did talk about secrets and shame.
Oh yeah, I did an episode on my podcast. I read Brené Brown's book
On vulnerability.
Yes, yeah. To lead, what is it? Lead fearlessly. It's her second book, mm-hmm. and I read it. My purpose was from a managerial standpoint. Like, I'm terrible with other humans. I use too few words. I'm very emotionally detached, and I was trying to get some insight from it for, like, managing people in my company. And it really is like, that's the least that I got from it. But what she talks about is like, when you look at the world in this vacuum and you don't have context, like, that's where shame can only live in this little bubble. Whereas if you talk about your thing and then you realize this person and this person and this person all have that same experience, then that shame kind of fades away. And so that's why it's so important to talk about those things that you feel ashamed about. Maybe nothing will change, but probably it's going to open up the conversation for a lot more people to have the conversations that they need to and just lift some of that shameful feeling. Because literally today, like, when I talk about my plastic surgery, I feel ashamed. I don't even like saying
it. Oh, you do feel ashamed?
In my head I'm not, but there's still those emotions like, yeah, no, not everybody can afford that. Not everybody, just whatever it is. Like, I should have just been happy with how I looked. And so there's those thoughts. They quickly go away, much more quickly than they ever did before, but they're still there. And so I think continuing to talk about it, like, even the title, calling it a mommy makeover, it's like, you've earned it. You did this really hard thing, so you've earned it. But if you just had a body and wanted to get the same procedures that are a mommy makeover, that's just plastic surgery. And that's just you being selfish and greedy and not liking the way you look. You didn't do the hard work to earn the mommy makeover. So even when I was talking about it originally, I don't like calling it a mommy makeover because that it's like softening it for everybody because they can accept it better if I've been a mom. So yeah, I regularly like I'm going through conflicts in my head about that.
First of all, I want to just backtrack about your dad and say thank you for sharing that with us. And I'm so sorry for the loss of your father.
Thank you for saying that. It's unfortunately a tough time of year, you know, Thanksgiving, and then his birthday is in a few days. So it's just kind of heavy. It's just a heavy time of year for me.
Would you consider yourself a very resilient?
I wouldn't have. If you would have asked me that 10 years ago, but I think about that. That's a good question. And I think about it from time to time that I'm not so sure everybody can come out on the other end.
I think our kids.
Yeah.
I mean, why do you do anything? It's, you know, for the people you love. And I think you'd be in a very different situation if we didn't have our kids. Mm-hmm. Because that's totally something to live for. And obviously we have each other, but
yeah.
We're both adults. And so when you just have another adult in your life, you can spiral and that adult can handle themselves. And when you have two kids, it kind of pulls you back to having something like, you know, these little lives depend on me. So I'm going to figure out a way through. And I mean, it's a day by day. Holidays are harder, but sometimes a Tuesday is just as hard.
Yeah. Rainy days, you know, not to like pat myself on the back, but I'm pretty resilient. It first started, Mina and I were living together for only a few months. And I got the phone call that my best friend had died in a car accident. And it's interesting because when you think you can't get like more broken, you get more broken, and then you get more broken, and you just don't know how you're gonna pull yourself back up sometimes. But Mina often reminds me that there's people that depend on me, and Jordan Peterson, you know who Jordan Peterson is?
I do.
He has a quote that says, yeah, never underestimate the hole that you'll leave in the people's lives around you if you're gone. So if I weren't resilient, there'd be a lot of bummed out people, I think. And I like that quote a lot. It helps me out.
And Mina, how is it for you in holding that space for Steve?
It's hard.
I hate that. That it's like the pressure. Like I sometimes hold back of saying like I'm having a bad day because I don't want her to have that pressure, because I know that she has to naturally feel that. And I didn't mean to cut you off. I just wanted to say that.
I mean, it's hard just because I was raised very differently. Like there wasn't a lot of emotion and a lot of like open communication. And so I'm not good at that. I've learned how to be better at it as I've gotten older, as I've been in relationships, as I've gone to therapy. But I'm also a problem solver and I can't solve any of these problems. Right. And then they just keep fucking coming. And so it has been over the last, you know, 10 years of being together, I've just felt more helpless than I ever have in any other time in my life, because there's nothing I can do. There's nothing I can say. There's nothing. And that's the very uncomfortable position for me. And then on top of that, being like, we have our kids, but they don't know, you know, what's going on. I mean, they know that about the loss and all that, but like, they don't know if Steve's having a hard day. And so I am his whole world. And it's just, everything has like an extra layer of thought, for better or for worse, like the holidays. It's not the regular stressful holidays. It's like, okay, how do we hold space for who does Steve want to see? You know, he still has family. He has his brother here. Where do you want to go? How do we want to do this? And it's not a normal conversation. It's a very loaded conversation because there's naturally so many emotions around it that we've had to work really hard with each other to figure out how to communicate well and effectively in these much more like pressure cooker type conversations because of the loss that is there. And it's required a lot of learning and understanding on my part. And I think if we get better at figuring out how to handle it as time passes, there's distance. So it makes it slightly easier, but it's still not easy. Yeah. And I'm still not good at it.
But what I think Mina doesn't sometimes understand is that, and some of your listeners that have gone through this similar situation, and you have too, that I don't need you to do anything.
I know. Just, and that's hard for me.
I just need you to be home sometimes. Yeah. This last winter, I don't know why, but it was particularly rough for me. And there was a day I was at home and I was just crying like the whole day. And I texted Mina and I said, you know, I'm not sure what you're up to right now, but if you can just come home. And she did. And I immediately snapped out of it, and that's all I needed, you know, and the kids were home in a few hours and my day completely turned around. And that's all I need. Like, I'll be honest with you, this morning we had couples therapy. I came home, I did my workout, and I literally cried for probably an hour and a half up until we hit record on this. But Mina just being home almost immediately, as soon as she turns the corner, just makes me feel not alone.
I think that's so important. First of all, I'm going to keep repeating myself. I really am so grateful for you sharing your heart, because I think so many people hold so much inside. And yeah. I think that's why there's so much pain in the world, because people are unable to just share and to, there is nothing people can do, but to know we're loved and to, for someone to hold that container of space is healing. Like there's no, like there's really no fixing.
No.
Right? No. I hate to learn that.
Right. There's no fixing.
No, you're just, so I see a grief counselor, and, you know, day one of me seeing her, she was like, my job is to give you tools to make your life better from today forward. Like, imagine there's a toolbox right beside your feet. And when you have a bad moment or a bad day or a bad week, I want you to be able to pull out the right tools that I've helped you get. Pull those tools out and fix that hour, day, week, however long it is. And I joked with my grief counselor, like the first day we met, I was like, you know, what's so hard about my situation is that I just don't really have anybody to talk to. And I joked and I said, I could probably go down to like the VFW bar and talk to some old dudes that have lost everybody in their life. That's about it.
There's not a lot of people.
Not a lot of people in my shoes. And Mina and I have talked about this before too, where I just think people sometimes that are in our lives, friends and family, don't know what to say.
Oh, I don't know what to say. Yeah. And yeah, I don't know how you would expect anyone to
know what to say.
To know what to say. But people are also very uncomfortable with silence, and that's why they fill it with dumb shit.
That's exactly right. I had a few weeks ago, I had these incredible women on, the Chemo Queens, and they have this resource and this list of, you know, what to say to people going through chemo and cancer. And they also have a list of what not to say.
Yeah.
So more importantly.
Bingo. Yeah. Bingo.
I one of our good friends, I mean, we've had a couple other people that we know well that have gone through infertility issues, but one in particular that lost the baby pretty far into the pregnancy. And I literally Googled what to say and what not to say. And it was, might have been dumb, but it's so helpful because all, like, I think what I ended up texting her was like the blue butterfly, because when that is the symbol for the loss, the baby, like the love, like it's just the symbol. And that's all that she needed. Like, you are here, you were in my thought. I have no words, but I'm thinking about you. And once she was a little bit further through it and could talk to any humans, was able to say like that it's just perfect. Like, that's what I needed. So you don't have to fill, you know, a scrolling text to let someone know you care. It's just like a heart or I'm thinking about you.
That's right.
And so if you don't know what to say, Google will tell you.
That's right.
What's the best thing to say and the worst thing to say through someone like who had the loss of their parent, who went through IVF, who lost a baby? Like, just look it up if you don't know, particularly the don't say.
Particularly the don't say, because yeah. I can't tell you the things people said to me when I was before I even went in surgery for cancer. It was like this one woman I had said on the podcast before, because I had a double mastectomy and I chose to get implants, and I'm tiny and my physicality is really important to me. And I still wanted to look beautiful. It was really important to me to still look beautiful. And I remember this woman said to me, she goes, well, before my surgery, I had a great body, but afterwards it's just, everything was terrible. I never looked good again. And I was like, you're saying this to me right before I'm going in for my surgery. Like, what?
Yeah.
So I had to, like, you know, let that go. But why would you even say that? Why would you even say that?
Things that come out of people's mouths is amazing to me. And just at, like, in the last year, I just turned 39. I have really embraced blocking people. Because before it was this competition. Again, just with myself. I'm not competing with anyone else. No one even knows there's a competition. But I'm like, I want as many followers and I want to break the 100,000. I want to break the 200,000. And now, and I wouldn't block anyone because I'm like, then it'd be one less follower. And I'm like, block, block, delete, block. Uh-uh. Don't need that. And it's been enlightening.
Thank you guys for listening. We have the second half next week. So until then, you know, you guys know what to do. There is the link in the show notes. Drop a question, drop a comment. And until next time. I'll see you guys next Tuesday.